Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! p.m. here in the Eastern Standard Time Zone, and, well, here we are. It is the fourth day of February 2016. This is The Horn. Let's get this part out of the way early. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes, indeed. And I invite you, if you are so inclined, to wander on over to headonradionetwork.com and jump into the chat room. Just click the tab that says chat room and pick yourself out a screen name and a password if you've never done it before. And you'll be right in there with Anatole and King of Cups and Mr. Gibson, Tim from L.A., Truth Seeker, and me, as well as longtime, inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky. Mm-hmm. There will be much merrymaking and much real-time multimedia extravaganzizing. Ooh, that's a word. Keep us busy for the next 2 hours and 58 minutes or so. Yes. This is also a listener-supported broadcast operation, and your support is both needed and requested. Mm-hmm. And toward that end, thanks go out. I did the Who Am I part, Tim. Dadgummit. You guys, you just assume that I forget to say who I am now. God. What are we going to do? But no, this is a listener-supported operation, and I want to thank everyone who helped to meet Brother Deacon Ace's challenge last night so that we could finish last night to the good. And so we have only the usual $200 to raise this evening, and that is a wonderful, wonderful thing. So, the tab is over. It says contribute also at headonradionetwork.com, and you go in there, you fill out the basic information, you leave blank. You leave blank the part about what you do for Starfleet down there on board the Starship Enterprise, and you just get to the next page. And so we look for 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 12, 50, 32 at 6 and a quarter, and of course 64. At $3.13, because we round up from the half a decimal point. Yeah, I done said it, dadgummit. I'm Bob Kincaid. Oh, it's coming in from all sides this evening. This is, as usual, going to be another merry broadcast romp. I have a note of that. I have no doubt whatsoever. Let's see. What for this evening? Well, this is Thorn in the Side Thursday. A program for which we never use the initials. I mean, we've been known to say MM for More In Monday, or TT for Titanic Tuesday, or FOTFP for Friday on the Front Porch. We never reduce Thorn in the Side Thursday. We never reduce that to initials. Apparently, our friends over at FYINation.com will be switching away from carrying this program to debate coverage this evening at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Please make a note of it. Yes, yes. But you can continue to get this program all the way up to 9 o'clock, you know, Eastern Time, at the WhiteRoseSociety.org stream, which you can get easily by going to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and clicking, well, listen live. And, of course, nothing's going to cut away on TuneIn or Stitcher or Roku or any of the other many platforms where this program is carried. Okay? Okay, so I think we're all square on that front. Oh, the mailing address for those of you who, don't like PayPal, or as it is sometimes referred to, PayPirate. There's a mailing address if you want to help support the show, that the program that way, the network that way. And that is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, you know, named after the president and everything, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. Okie dokie, okie dokie. So we're cruising merrily along through the beginning of the program here, thank you. Jim noted as to last night's conversation between Pastor Pillow and me, he said, "Bob, I laughed so hard last night I nearly wet myself." Well, you know, we've got to have inspiration. We will not be satisfied until there has been a full-on wedding. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad a lot of people enjoyed that conversation last night, and I heard about it over the course of the night and the day. I thought we would... begin the evening kind of close to home here, just to give you a little update. The Senate of the state of West Virginia has passed the Everybody Carry a Handgun Everywhere bill, so that it will eventually be wending its way over to the desk of GERT, Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, who doesn't think it's a good idea, but as we learned to our chagrin last year, a veto of a gubernatorial, or an override of a gubernatorial veto in the state, requires only a bare majority, no 2/3 or 3/4 or 6 7/8. Nope, just a bare majority. So sooner rather than later, we will probably have, in a state that is, by the way, economically collapsing, just a little sort of observation along the way there, everybody's going to have a goddamn gun. Sorry to start with the swearing so early in the program, but if any issue merits it, that's it. But the vote, now you can well imagine, there are 55 counties, you don't have to imagine this part, it's real, there are 55 counties in West Virginia. Every county in our Senate does not get its own senator. The state is instead carved up into senatorial districts, so that, say, one senator sometimes represents two counties. And sometimes a county has two senators. Mm-hmm. But there aren't 55 senators. But there are, you know, more than five. I mention that because there were only two, count them, two no votes on the everybody gonna get a gun bill. And I might add that there are more than two actual Democrats in the Senate of the state of West Virginia. What was it, 32-2, 33-2? Really? I mean, it was a mud hole stomping that everybody going to get a bill or get a gun bill. And it, with the usual caveat that I don't run around being afraid of things, that scares the pee-pee out of me. And by the way, an amendment was offered. You're going to love this. an amendment was offered to the Everybody Gotta Get a Gun bill to say that on the first part, that you had to be at least 21 years old to be carrying your shooting iron piece anywhere you wanted to go in almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan. You know, when Mr. Mountaineer will take his darling bride in his arms, hug her to his or her bosom, and kiss her passionately, saying, "Darling," as he straps on his Smith and Wesson 357 Magnum revolver on one hip and his Glock 19 9mm 17 round capacity semi-automatic pistol on his other, and his speed loaders and his spare clips as he straps them on. "Darling, you know I love you. If I'm not back by 6, well, keep dinner warm in the Irving for me." As he and then steps boldly out into the frosty Appalachian winter to go and pick up some kibbles and bits and some of that wet little Friskies cat food and a gallon of milk and a package of diapers and some wipes and maybe a loaf of bread and some peanut butter down to the Wally World. It's a dangerous world out there. Yes. Nope, it's not going to be just 21-year-olds. 18-year-olds can do that, too, because one of the God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-dementalist, ammosexuals that inhabit the West Virginia Senate said, "I feel like it would be unfair to limit this to only kids over 21. If you're 18 years old, you can vote in West Virginia, and you can go and serve your country. It would be unfair. I mean, we got 18-year-olds out there that's heads of households and working jobs and taking care of babies and wives. It'd be unfair to make them go out into this cold, cruel, dangerous world without no shooting iron whatsoever when he goes to the Wally World or perhaps the Advance Auto Parts for a quart of 10W30. It's a crazy, dangerous world out there, and ISIS is behind every corner. And only a good teenager with a gun can stop a bad teenager with a gun." Okay, I added to some of that was I added on. But that happened. They shot, well, probably better not say shot down. They rejected the amendment that would limit the everybody can carry a gun everywhere bill to 21-year-olds and up because freedom.
Hillbilly Wolverines!
Right. So then they offered up and now, I know I may create the impression that West Virginia is this sort of wild place. I mean, we do put it on our bumper stickers and our welcome signs. Wild, wonderful West Virginia, but I don't think that's what whoever came up with that had in mind. No. But I may give the impression that this is some sort of wild-eyed state full of half-crazed gun enthusiasts, and if you get that impression, well, good, because I mean for you to. Because we apparently are. Because, well, I mean, but that's just with, I mean, it, so, we offer in our public schools, and I presume in the expensive private ones, too, we offer driver's education. Long before a child can actually legally operate a motor vehicle, well, about a year, by him or herself, we have classes teaching people how to drive cars. Mm-hmm. I know several outfitters out there that can teach you how to tie flies and all of that stuff before you ever step out into the Cranberry River for a little fly fishing before you ever get your fishing license. Mm-hmm. I mean, so naturally when the everybody got to carry a gun bill was moving through, a senator offered an amendment to it saying, look, let's at least make sure that everybody's going to carry a weapon has to have a class on how to handle a gun. Nope. No, the Republicans in the Senate of the state of West Virginia noped out of that, just the lickety split. That's a new phrase, by the way, nope out. Mm-hmm. They noped out of the idea that people actually need to be educated on how to use a gun, saying, no, we're going to reject that because, see, that's just a backdoor attempt to license and register a gun, that making people learn how guns work. Really? This isn't satire. This isn't parody. This isn't meant to be funny, and I trust there aren't very many people, if any, laughing. No. This is real.
It'd be unfair to me.
You know, that's... Well, you know, we're going to... I think we should have a public school system in West Virginia so we can teach people how to read. No, no, no. Nope, 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 nope. Nope, we're not going to have any public school system. We're just going to give them books and hope for the best. They can sort it out along the way. All I can do is wonder when the Republicans are going to do away with driver's licenses.
Well, driving ain't a constant constitutional right like having a gun is.
Hey, Jesus H. Jumping Christ. Even the Minutemen had to... You can almost see them practicing out there on the common with young Aloysius Elijah McGillicuddy with the business end of his musket, his muzzle loader, you know, pointed right at his eyeball, and you know, the militia captain comes around. No, no, son, that's... No, you point that at the British people, okay? But aren't we British?
Well, not for long. We're Massachusettsians. So, something.
So, no, son, no, you can't use the butt end of your rifle to scoop up your mashed potatoes here. At the luncheon meeting of the Minutemen. No, son. But that's our... That's our reality here. And it's going to happen. The various and sundry sheriffs and chiefs of police and whatnot would like for it not to happen because they don't think, I mean, that law enforcement considers that they have a dangerous enough job as it is. And I generally agree with them. I mean, it's not as dangerous as, say, being an iron worker or a carpenter or a nurse or a cab driver or anything like that. But it's a dangerous enough job. And they think their job is dangerous enough that maybe it ought not be made more so. But when one is dealing with a gun bill, one has to be careful as a member of law enforcement not to inspire, Billy Bob and Jimmy Ray to say, look, there's that police chief doesn't want us to be able to protect ourselves at the Wally World down there in the frozen foods. Let's kill him. One hopes that GERT will, upon the recommendation of law enforcement in this state, will veto the bill. And then the teabaggers will override the veto. And before, probably before the first tender shoots of ramps begin poking through the soil here in a month and a half or so, everybody in West Virginia who wants to carry a gun can carry a gun. Because freedom. Well, that's true. Another one there, Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, pointing out statistically, farming is more dangerous than being a cop. It absolutely is. And you can die in ways that are far nastier than being shot. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, well, hell, Bob, if that's the reasoning, they may as well lower the drinking age to 18. Alcohol and guns, what could go wrong? Right, but no, because while you're good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-dementalist, ammosexuals are all for gun-carrying, they know because they've been taught by their pastor that ain't really wine what they's talking about in your New Testament there, that was really just grape juice that got translated as wine by sinners what drank wine. It was really just grape juice. Jesus never drunk no alcohol. Nor nobody else, for that matter. And so the preachers will be there and make sure that the 18-year-olds can't have a beer, legal-like, but they can have a gun. Because, you know, if you're driving a car drunk, that makes you a real dangerous human being. But being a person who doesn't know the first thing about how to operate a firearm, walking around with a firearm, that just makes you patriotic. Well, on the way to being a patriot. I'm telling you, it's going to get fun around here. Tim from L.A., guns for everyone? So does that mean the Black Lives Matter folks can carry their Uzis and AKs, and it's okay if ISIS can buy their MP5 in West Virginia? I guess them gun-dementalists support equality. I can see it now. Muslim women in their hijab or burqas walking around carrying an AR-15, and 15 or 20 black folks with their new Black Panther or X hat carrying their AK and an ammosexual bar. Yeah, we'll see how long this law will last. Oh, it'll last a hell of a lot longer than the people enjoy it. Some of the people enjoying it, Tim. And this being West Virginia, we don't have to worry about no ISIS nor Black Lives Matters nor because we got the Klan. Really. And then we got just average, ordinary, everyday white West Virginians who would join the Klan if there was a Klan near them, but they share the same belief system. Let's put it that way. Jim remarking, is that a pistol in your pocket, or are you just glad to see me? Makes Mae West prophetic. No, yes. Maybe that'll be the new greeting around. God bless the state of West Virginia. Is that a gun in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me? Mm-hmm. If gay folks get the rainbow flag, what do the ammosexuals get? What color? Oh, blood red for death. Yes, absolutely. Just no rainbows, just red. Question coming from Robert in Australia. Bob, everybody got to carry a gun. Isn't that big government telling you what to do? Well, yes, it would be. And technically, they're not telling you everybody's got to carry a gun. They're just saying everybody can. And they highly recommend it because it makes for a more polite society. Because dead people laying on barroom floors, they're real polite. You know, the death notices through these first few days of 2016 have seemed decidedly unpleasant. The guy who succeeded Mel Blanc in being the voice of Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Sylvester the Cat, Tweety, Yosemite Sam, and Marvin the Martian, by the name of Joseph Alasky, is dead now at the age of 63. Maurice White, the founder of Earth, Wind, and Fire, died today, as both Marty and Carol informed me. And as Carol asked, you know, God, and what? God can't take one Republican? This note coming from Steve in New York, subject line, guns. Bob, I'm only 45, however, and I don't know if I ever actually asked this. When did this country become so gun crazy? Even when I was growing up, I don't remember this obsession with firearms and everyone having one. When, if you can begin to pinpoint it, did this pro-gun culture become a gun-fetishized culture? Oh, I can pinpoint it. And there's no small amount of irony involved in this. California got gun control at the urging of then-Governor Ronald Reagan when pictures began to be circulated of really terrifying people, in other words, another word for terrifying, black Panthers Party for Self-Defense, standing on the steps of the California State House with a bunch of guns. California got sensible gun control. I think they actually violated the rules of the Newtonian and Einsteinian universe, and they back-timed it to before the black folks had the guns. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that there's a certain amount of irony involved in it is that with the ascendancy of Ronald Wilson Reagan, whose name adds up to the numbers 6, 6, and 6, just saying, with his ascendancy to the presidency of the United States, just about everything that is wrong with America today began right there, right then. Jerry Falwell leveraged the Southern Baptist Convention and evangelical Protestantism in support of the Republican Party, and evangelical Protestantism became just the ideological arm of the Republican Party. And yes, at the same time, the NRA. Changed its focus entirely from being a shooting and sporting preparedness organization that taught people how to appropriately handle firearms and certified people to teach 22 caliber shooting as a class in gym in college and that kind of thing. I actually took that class. Had an old Marine drill instructor who taught the class, you know, just to keep his hand in. Taught us about that whole brass thing, breathe, relax, aim, sight, squeeze, something like that. Because you don't pull the trigger, because you squeeze it. Mm-hmm. But they transformed from being that into a militant, because it all also coincided with the rebranding of the Republican Party as the party of people who would oppose the liberals. And that's about the same time that the idea or the pronunciation even of the word liberal became a dirty, 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 awful, nasty thing. So it's right there, Steve. I mean, perhaps you might take issue with me, but I'm pretty comfortable with that. I'm pretty certain of it. Because I remember what a filthy thing Ronald Reagan turned the word liberal into. Mm-hmm. So we've got that. Quite a little bit for getting started on a thorn in the side Thursday, isn't it? And yet we haven't really even gotten into the meat of things. I mentioned the gun bill. There's a couple of others that you might find interesting. the prevailing wage, and I trust that that y'all all know what prevailing wage means, because this is, after all, one of the most intelligent radio audiences on Earth. The prevailing wage is dead. And this is, of course, after some overly optimistic, you know, kumbaya singing tambourine shakers in the liberal and labor movement last year.
We've come to an agreement with the teabaggers about prevailing wage. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, the teabaggers came back this year, and having taken said tambourine shaking kumbaya singing liberals out behind the barn and axe handled them for a little bit, said, fuck y'all. Y'all don't need no decent wages. It's West Virginia. God made West Virginia to train the faithful. If God wanted you to have money, he'd have made you a coal operator. And you'd be giving us money, and we'd be doing your bidding. See how it works? Yeah. So prevailing wage is gone, or will be gone. And for the first time in the long history of the state of West Virginia, right to work is, you know, right to work for less, right to starve, no rights at all, has been passed, and will in the all together entirely too near future find its way to the desk of Gert. From over in Springfield, Virginia, the Old Dominion, a creep by the name of, what's his name? Come on, give me a said. Mark Mix. And somewhere in the distant past, we played audio clips from this idiot. And, you know, he's far past being an idiot. He's just a mean-spirited bastard. Mark Mix, president of the 2.8 million-member National Right to Work Committee, issued the following statement regarding the West Virginia House of Delegates passing the West Virginia Right to Work Bill.
Today marks another milestone in the fight to protect every West Virginian's right to get or keep a job without having to pay union dues or fees. With the House of Delegates' passage of the Right to Work Bill, West Virginia is on the verge of becoming America's 26th right-to-work state. I urge the West Virginia Senate to quickly pass the House's version and send the bill to Governor Tomlin's desk so my organization can continue to fuck the living daylights out of working people all over this country. 26 states is not enough. We want to fuck every worker in America because Republican Party. Yes. When right to work becomes the law, the hard-working men and women of the Mountain State will be free from big labor's forced unionism power. West Virginians will no longer be required to pay tribute to a union boss just to keep their jobs, and instead every employee can decide for themselves if paying union dues is a good use of their hard-earned money, and they won't have any union boss or union representation or shop steward when the real boss, the people who signed the checks, the employers, the people with the money, the capitalists come along and say, well, fuck you, you're fired, and they won't be able to do a goddamn thing about it, and we think that's just lovely. A West Virginia right-to-work law would not prevent any worker from joining a union. It would only prevent union bosses from being able to order a worker fired simply for refusing to financially support a union he or she does not support.
You know what? It takes a hell of a lot of brass to sit there and type out a filthy goddamn lie like that and hit send.
The time for West Virginia to join the ranks of the other 25 right-to-work states in America is at hand.
They characterize this as outlawing forced unionism. Of course, the other way to look at it is outlawing the Freedom of Association Clause of the First Amendment.
West Virginians don't need good wages. West Virginians are West Virginians for a reason. If God liked them, they would have been born somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah. Fuck you, Mark Mix. God, I hope you get hit by a bus. While we're talking about the First Amendment. Here's a question. All the West Virginians who voted for all those teabaggers who are killing the ability of people to have decent wages and things like that, let's see how you like living indoors and eating having three squares a day, huh? I'm telling you, it's gonna get weird, crazy, and mean here. Meaner. Like I said, we've already got a $300-some-odd million budget deficit that the teabaggers have no idea how to fix. You know what they could do? They could raise the taxation rate on Marcellus shale gas. No, but that wouldn't be fair because that would hurt the feelings. That would hurt the feelings of the dear, precious little, you know, gas producers, the frackers. Oh, well. And you know what's even funnier? One of our gubernatorial candidates here, not to just dwell on West Virginia, but I mean, yeah, come on. Let me get the story here. Here it is. Do you remember? See, Don Blankenship has kind of been quiet lately, being as how he got slapped on the wrist by a trial jury for evading the safety regulations and obfuscating them and outright, succeeded in circumventing them. And those regulations were related to the incineration of 29 human beings. But the coal bosses ye have always with ye. Enter Bob Murray. Remember Bob Murray? Murray Energy? Remember how he made all his people come out of the mines to stand as human backdrops for Bishop Willard Romney? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that Bob Murray. The same Bob Murray who got a bunch of people blown up in Crandall Canyon in Utah some years back. Yeah, that Bob Murray. Well, in the state newspaper, the Gazette, and it's now the Gazette Mail because they folded the failing right-wing rag into it, Booth Goodwin, who was the man who convicted, the hell of a note, Booth Goodwin, the man who convicted Don Blankenship of a misdemeanor that doesn't even carry a year in jail. Booth Goodwin is running for governor. And I'm not saying he's a bad candidate. The Goodwins in this state have been power brokers for a very, very long time, and they've been quite instrumental in the center-right, nowhere near the middle Democratic politics of this state. And so young Booth has decided he's going to run for governor. As compared to, say, Jim Justice, the coal boss, who wrote a hot check to a bunch of middle school cheerleaders. No, really. Or, say, Jeff Kessler, the closest thing we have in this state to an actual liberal. Not to say he's a liberal, just the closest thing we got. But Booth Goodwin had a piece in the Gazette the other day. As Dr. Bill pointed out to me when he sent it along, he said, this is something we rarely hear from anyone in Charleston. Coal bosses, Booth Goodwin writes, don't care about us. See, I don't know. Booth, it's not like you've been eating beans, buddy. I think you would say coal bosses don't care about you. Booth, you're really not part of the us, buddy. Coal bosses don't care about us. This is the clear message Murray Energy CEO Robert Murray sent to the people of West Virginia last week when he called for the, and this isn't a joke, called for the legislature to slash coal severance taxes in the middle of a state budgetary nightmare. According to Murray, coal has paid more than its fair share to West Virginia. Really? Asks Booth Goodwin. He wants to go there? And, of course, you know, the coal industry has taken far more than it has ever given back. And it has made its wealth in a currency exchange that involves working people in this state trading their bodily integrity, their blood, their lungs, their brains, their hearts, their very lives themselves in exchange for a pittance of money so that the coal bosses could get wildly rich, absolutely devastate the physical reality of West Virginia, and then go off and sip champagne, or perhaps eat lark's vomit canapes or hummingbird's tongues or whatever it is that 0.1% do with their bosom buddies on Wall Street, folks like Lloyd Blankfein. Booth Goodwin continues. West Virginia miners have consistently been on the losing end of the deal when coal companies shut down mines or go bankrupt. This is true. Recently, a federal bankruptcy judge in Virginia approved $11.9 million worth of potential bonuses for 15 senior managers at Alpha Natural Resources. And that, too, is also very, very true. Let that settle in for a minute. Alpha Natural Resources has permanently eliminated something north of 800 underground coal mining jobs and jobs associated with coal processing, that sort of thing. And they're in bankruptcy, and they're going to, get away with robbing pension funds. They're going to get away with robbing health care plans that they had agreed to. And the bosses are going to get $11.6 million bonuses for doing all of that. Now, the people who are getting the $11.9 million worth of bonuses for 15 senior managers, they, through their bankruptcy lawyer, also turned around and asked the bankruptcy court, as Booth Goodwin notes, to cut $3 million in benefits to over 1,000 miners. Alpha has idled or closed more than 80 mines since 2011 and has kicked its hardworking miners to the curb while its operators get filthy rich. How much coal in the portfolio there in the Goodwin Treasury booth? Just wondering. Mm-hmm. Just a little bit, not a lot, just some. Never mind. I mean, because if you're rich in West Virginia, you got your hand in some coal somewhere along the way. Unfortunately, Booth Goodwin continues, the Alpha example is nothing new. Coal companies have established a well-worn path of leaving longtime miners high and dry as companies fail to renew collective bargaining agreements, file for bankruptcy, or renege on promises for health and retirement benefits that miners spent their whole lives working toward. In the boardroom, it's called corporate restructuring and executive severance, but it is truly no different than what they call on the streets smash and grab. Mm-hmm. The legislature needs to find a solution to fill in a $353 million financial crater by next week. It is the, and that's, you know, next week. It is the worst budget shortfall in our state's history. And you know, I realize that $353 million to a state like California or New York or maybe even Massachusetts is chump change. For us, that's real, live, honest-to-God, walking-around money. And it is the worst budget shortfall in the history of the state. To stave off defaulting on its financial obligations and to keep the lights on at the Capitol during the legislative session, supplemental appropriation bills are being considered. One such bill would drain over $50 million from the Rainy Day Fund. The West Virginia Constitution requires the legislature to pass a balanced budget, but complying with this high mandate has proven excruciating as coal prices fall, coal companies file for bankruptcy, and low natural gas prices damper continued production. While these dark storm clouds loom over us, Mr. Murray believed it was the perfect time to demand the state's coal severance tax be cut from 5% to 2%, resulting in a $100 million per year cost to the state treasury. Mr. Murray's recent comments demonstrate more than his knack for bad timing. They demonstrate a blind obsession with building piles of money for himself and other coal operators while the rest of West Virginia pinches pennies. The call to slash severance taxes now, in the midst of this historic budget crisis, is simply wrong, selfish, and just plain stupid. Well, it's only stupid if you're not a coal operator. If you're a coal operator, it makes perfectly good sense. Finishing up, Booth Goodwin says, big coal companies may not care about what's in the best interest of West Virginia, but I do. I encourage our legislators to work together to smartly balance our budget and not give in to industry pressure to dig ourselves deeper. West Virginia will not take it anymore. West Virginia won't take it anymore. Hit me again. I can put a little stank on it. We'll take it. Oh, yes, we'll take it. We'll take whatever our betters decide to give out, whether it be a scrap from the table or a kick in the ribs, because, you know, we're West Virginians, and we're used to it. We're tough. God made West Virginia to train the faithful. But that business in that other earlier paragraph about the budget crisis. I got an idea for a budget. Granted, it would be a drop in the bucket, but it would be symbolically valuable. What if every member of the teabagger legislature volunteered to turn their legislative salary, and, you know, each one's about $15,000, but turn that back around into the state treasury because of their abiding love for West Virginia? Most of them, if not all of them, don't even need the 15 large. Maybe we could continue to pay their expenses because they do have to come. I mean, if you got to go from Martinsburg to Charleston, hell, that's practically a two-day drive. So they have to put up in hotels and such like. Maybe we could continue to pay for them to stay at the Nights Inn or the Days Inn or the Super 8 or that sort of thing. But no more Marriott. No more fancy stays at the Holiday Inn. Oh, no. But they're not going to do that because they are not. What's the word I'm looking for? No, it's not stupid. They're not going to do anything that... takes away from their ability to enrich themselves, because what's the point of being in government in the first place if you can't do that? But there's a little something else buried in there. The whole thing about how cutting the severance tax from 5 to 2% would result in $100 million a year cost to the state treasury. We're in this leaky little boat. Because we, once upon a time, just loved it.
when those pissant 5% severance taxes were making counties feel like they was really somebody. Because, see, all let's understand something. If the severance tax had been 10 or 15% all along, do you have any idea how rich the state of West Virginia would be? You do realize, I trust, that West Virginia has only been actually taxing the severance of coal from the earth itself. That's a relatively new thing. The coal industry got to strip away all the coal it wanted almost for free for almost a century. Yeah. Even today, a coal company with 1,000 acres of untapped coal reserves, there aren't that many left, but, well, or a land company with 1,000 acres of untapped coal reserves pays less on those 1,000 acres than I do on this ramshackle, falling-down, 80-year-old mansion on 1 acre of ground whose minerals I don't even own. There's a reason we're in the mess we're in West Virginia. We put all of our eggs in one toxic, cancerous basket. And nobody, even though they were warned as far back as the 1970s, you know, y'all might want to do something about diversifying your economy. Well, why in the hell would we want to do that? I mean, here are these fine, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered coal operators, and they're making us rich. Why would we want anything else? That coal's going to be here forever. Because if you've been in West Virginia or Appalachia for any particular length of time, you know that, for instance, the coal industry has said things like, well, there's 500 more years of coal in West Virginia. And that was predicated on mining it, you know, one tablespoon at a time. And now it's gone. And here we sit, us hillbillies. Well, I thought you said there's 500 years left. Well, shit, son, we lied to you. Didn't you know? But we're coal companies. We lie for a living. We do this professionally, son. Ain't you figured that out? Damn. Go ask your great-granddaddy what died of black lung, how truthful we are. Suckers. I am beginning, I don't know how I would even begin to do something like this. But I'm beginning to think it might be time to study on getting right the hell on out of here. Because, this is gonna this if it hasn't been already, this is no place to be. Having a ringside seat to the carboniferous apocalypse is not going to be particularly entertaining. But I don't even begin to know how we would think about getting out. It's disturbing. And one last thing, because I mentioned the First Amendment. It's been a kind of a West Virginia kind of thorn in the side Thursday. It was yesterday morning, during a meeting of the Teabagger-controlled House Judiciary Committee, in the West Virginia legislature, when the chairman, Delegate John Schott, I'd like to buy a vowel, Vanna, made an announcement. He announced that video and photography would no longer be permitted in the legislature, in the committee room, unless one was a credentialed member of the media. No one else would be allowed to photograph or record. He did this before consideration of the Religious Freedom Bill. And hey, look, the Right to Work Bill. They don't like being caught doing the filthy business that they have been sent there by the goddamn Koch brothers to do. Schott said, well, it's just always been a rule. I've heard it repeated numerous times for as long as I know. The only problem is that is an absolute and unmitigated lie. Because nobody who had previously been involved with leading the committee could ever remember any such rule, because it didn't exist, because of that thing called the First Amendment, because, in fact, that is a public space and a public building. Jared Hunt said the chairman has broad discretion. He's the House of Delegates spokesman, which means that it's a political patronage job, and if he's got to do the bidding of the teabaggers if he wants to keep getting paid. In an age of election trackers and special interest groups being able to instantly share video images and memes in an attempt to influence policymaking, our chairmen are having to make tough calls as to what is and is not permissible. In other words, because social media is actually enabling stirrings of democratic action, the same will no longer be tolerated. And by the way, that Religious Freedom Bill, we saw what happened to Talibandiana last year, to the point that, to a certain extent, Talibandiana capitulated and said, well, okay, we won't. But they're still doing it. Well, we're not smart enough here that the teabaggers didn't introduce the one. Yes. So we've got a license to discriminate bill hiding its pernicious goals behind some notion of being able to freely worship the imaginary friend of your choice. It was during a hearing on the Religious Freedom Bill that Carling McManus was on the House floor taking pictures when a member of House staff said, you got a press pass? She said, no. He said, get back in your seat and stop taking pictures. So she sat in her seat and kept taking pictures. And then the staff member came up to her again and he said, if I hear your shutter one more time, I'll have you physically removed from the chamber. Then when she took out her phone to post something to Twitter, another staff member came back and said, turn that thing off and put it away. Then there's Carrie Megan Quick Blanco. She came to speak out against the Religious Freedom Bill. She said, I took a picture and was going to tweet it and send it to my family. I took the picture, but one of the gentlemen came over, and we're using the term loosely, and told me I wasn't allowed. I wasn't permitted to take pictures. I don't really understand what the secrecy is or what the deal with pictures is. Oh, really? Really, Carrie Megan? The deal is, these are Republicans. These are teabaggers. And they can't hardly tolerate in the least the idea that people would know what in the hell they're up to. It's really not that complicated. So, the last hour has been a happy little meander through the reality of your fellow Americans who happen to have the great good or misfortune of living in the sacrifice zone here in West Virginia, where sacrifice is not simply defined as being poisoned for coal company profits anymore, but, well, by God, you can sacrifice your constitutional rights as well. One hopes that Carrie Megan or Carling or somebody has already run to the ACLU and that a lawsuit is underway. Petition for injunction, request for damages, that kind of thing. Because that really is a violation of civil rights. Your First Amendment right is a civil right. And that particular thing that they did there, saying you can't have a civil right, well, it's called a prior restraint. And the courts just don't like prior restraints much at all, and really insist that there be an awfully damn good reason before one is imposed. For instance, claiming that one cannot yell movie in a crowded firehouse, that's a prior restraint. Okay, fire in a crowded movie house. That's a prior restraint, but there is a compelling state interest in saying that that's not legal because it can cause a rampage, a riot, and people can be trampled and killed trying to get to the doors. So, okay. But what compelling state interest is served by some godforsaken Republican teabagger saying, we don't want y'all taking any pictures of us? Yeah, what are you, fucking Amish? You're afraid they're going to get your soul? So there's the filibobster, and we are off and running, I will note. We're off and running on fundraising this evening. Thank you very kindly to Roger. Roger in Minnesota for getting us going. We now have, oh God, again with the ciphering, $196.87 to go in fundraising this evening. I'm getting kind of quick at this. Y'all is learning me something fierce. $196.87 to go in fundraising this evening. So the lines are open if you want to participate in the conversation, if you want to engage in conversation. This is, after all, conversation radio. 304-574-8178 is line one. The stress line, which works for some and not for others, and I'm still trying to figure out why that is 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. And Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. Okay? Okay. So, break time, and this being Thursday, we also have the Green News Report on the way as well. Like I said, it's conversation radio. It's the Horn, not Bob Kincaid. We'll be back.
Raise more hell than you. Do a couple rails and chase you. It's Thursday, February 4, 2016.
I know we can combat climate change and be the clean energy superpower of the 21st century.
Democrats keep pushing climate action. Republicans keep ignoring it.
We are literally drowning.
Florida mayors beg Marco Rubio to address rising sea levels. California Attorney General sues over massive Porter Ranch gas leak. Plus,
why would Governor Snyder trying to blame the city council for this decision when it was his own appointee who made it, and you have a city council that has no authority.
Plenty of blame to go around as FBI launches an investigation into Flint.
All of that blame and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The debate is over. Climate change is real.
Wait, are those people cheering for climate change? Man, elections are so confusing. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, speaking of action, we're finally seeing some action out here in California where the attorney general is now suing the gas company for this massive leak that continues in Porter Ranch, California, near us here in Los Angeles?
Yes, that's right. The Attorney General Kamala Harris and the Los Angeles County District Attorney have both now filed separate criminal lawsuits against Southern California Gas Company. They're accusing the company of failing to report the leak to state officials immediately after it happened.
Criminal lawsuits?
Yes, this is a very big deal. In politics, in the wake of Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley dropping out of the 2016 Democratic presidential primary race after the Iowa caucuses, Democrats are now down to just two candidates. Although their clean energy policies are not as ambitious as O'Malley's, both former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders pushed for action on climate change as they departed Iowa. Senator Sanders excoriated the Republican presidential slate for denying climate science.
Stop worrying about your campaign funds from big oil
or the Koch brothers or the coal industry. Worry about the planet. You're going to be leaving your children and your grandchildren.
Hey, children and grandchildren, don't pay the bills around here, Bernie.
But also remember that Senator Ted Cruz, who won the Republican Iowa caucuses, is a full-bore, unapologetic climate denier who has repeatedly accused U.S. scientists of outright fraud.
Cruz is an outright denier. Donald Trump is an outright denier, actually blaming the Chinese for the hoax that is climate change, according to him.
And for Senator Marco Rubio, who used to act as if he accepted climate science, now does not.
He was actually a leader on climate science one time, but not anymore.
And for 15 mayors in South Florida, the accelerating impacts of climate change are already hitting home. They have written a letter calling on Marco Rubio to drop his climate change denial and help his constituents deal with the immediate crisis of nearly daily flooding caused by rising sea levels that's occurring right now in their communities. On the broadcast, Pinecrest, Florida Mayor Cindy Lerner called for Rubio to act on the federal level.
We are literally drowning here in South Florida and have to rely on our next president understanding the risk that we and the other coastal communities all over this country are facing. We are ground zero. We are the canary in the coal mine, so to speak, of what's going to be happening throughout the United States.
Up in Michigan, the FBI is now investigating the handling of the Flint water crisis by the administration of Republican Governor Rick Snyder to determine whether any federal laws were broken. At a House committee hearing on Wednesday over the crisis, the Virginia Tech researcher who fought tenaciously to expose the fact that Flint's drinking water was contaminated with lead, Professor Mark Edwards, testified that the lion's share of the blame belongs to Michigan's State Department of Environmental Quality.
They were covering this up. There's no question about it. You read the emails. They lied in writing to the EPA, basically repeated one lie after another about the actual situation in Flint.
But Edwards said a pivotal role was played by the director of the Federal Environmental Protection Agency's regional director, Susan Hedman, when she discounted an EPA researcher's alarm.
EPA had the chance to be the hero here, and Ms. Hedman snatched defeat for EPA from the jaws of victory by discrediting his memo and standing by silently as she knew that federal law was not protecting Flint's children.
That regional EPA director has now resigned. EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy has apologized for the EPA's mishandling and pledged immediate and long-term action. For now, however, Flint's water remains unsafe. In Congress, Democrats and Republicans are now arguing over how much federal funding Flint will receive to replace its damaged water system, if any.
If any. Just amazing. Children poisoned for life because of this, and the same Republicans who pretend to be so concerned about the safety of the American people just don't seem to give a damn, do they? For much more on all of the stories we covered today and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Yeah, that congressional hearing was it was notable for who wasn't there as much as for who was. I guess Rick Snyder was just too busy being the wonderfulness that is Rick Snyder. 13 minutes past the hour on this Thursday, Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. Thank you very kindly to VJ with a note. VJ says, I hope this brings the amount down to a round number. And he did, in fact. We now have exactly $160 to go in fundraising for the evening, and I am very, very much appreciative, as are we all. Where to go? What to do? Oh, God, I'm so bundied out. I watched all day. Did the indictment get unsealed? I don't know. I do know that a good progressive Democrat from Oregon, Earl Blumenauer, has introduced a bill in the Congress that would force, to at least some extent, the seditious militants, the seditious militant white Mormon people, mostly Mormons, to pony up for what they cost the people of Burns, Oregon, and Harney County. Yeah, and had Devin say, cut the Bundy cord. Oh, I guess only after he's busy being forgotten in the federal prison system. But no, this this bill, which seems worth supporting, would call up, calls on the federal government to compensate the people of Harney County and Burns and the state of Oregon for about several million dollars that has been expended on these wastes of air, these patriots, the Hee-Haw Caliphate, Y'all-Qaeda, Vanilla ISIS, what have you. Earl Blumenauer introduced the legislation calling for prompt recompense because the cost has been around $100,000 a week. Earl Blumenauer said, while it's been costly in innumerable ways for the local community, the Burns Paiute tribe, the state, and the federal government, it has cost state and local law enforcement agencies an estimated $100,000 a week. Ultimately, the federal government's decision to about timing and manner of putting a stop to this ordeal have contributed to these costs. The legislation would allow the federal government to ease that burden by requiring the Department of Justice to quickly reimburse state and local law enforcement agencies up front for costs associated with responding to the armed takeover of the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge. Following the reimbursement, the legislation allows the U.S. Attorney General to seek to recover the federal government's costs by bringing civil action against the armed militia members to make sure the taxpayers aren't on the hook. Placing the burden of these costs on these armed militants will send a strong signal that an armed takeover of federal lands is unacceptable and not without consequences. Can we pretty please make sure that we include Cliven Bundy as one of the people, since he's out there hollering for insurrection and everything, because I'd kind of like to see all these goddamn cattle sold at auction. Hey, Cliven, I brought my barbecue grill, buddy. Moo, y'all. In remarks that he made on the floor of the House, Representative Blumenauer said, by the way, he's also a co-sponsor of the AIC Act, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign Act. It must be made clear that armed takeover of government or private facilities for grievances, real or imagined, is absolutely unacceptable and won't be tolerated. It's not just enough to enforce the law. We should recover damages from lawbreakers who tear up the landscape, degrade wildlife habitat, and destroy property. Where did they get the damn caterpillar entrenching machine? That thing was huge. Did we just leave one laying around, Mahler? Oh, I don't know. We should recover damages from lawbreakers who tear up the landscape, degrade wildlife habitat, and destroy property. When we talk in trillions here in Washington, D.C., maybe talk of $100,000 here or $1 million there, it doesn't sound like very much, but to the state of Oregon, it matters. For this small community, a few $100,000 has a significant impact on the local taxpayers that shouldn't be made to pay the bill. Damn right! Absolutely right. They did nothing to cause these ill-informed, poorly educated, drop-dead, stupid right-wing POSs to do what they did. Oh, hell no. Yeah, let's run over to line one. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening. How you doing?
I'm well, Jim. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Pretty good. I'll tell you, it's a hell of a mess up there and what they expect the taxpayers to...
Well, those four dumb bastards are still there.
They're still there.
Yeah.
Well, I guess they're just thumbing their nose at the federal government, aren't they?
Yeah, I guess because you can.
Well, you know, if they see it happen in, you know, the House and the Senate, Well, they say we can do it too. This afternoon, I watched Maxine Waters, Democrat from California, try to get this bill that's pending for the House about making banks responsible. And on the Republican side, they were talking about, well, they want to protect these businesses like Rent-A-Center and ammunition makers and gun sellers and stuff like that. In other words, what they want to do is to strip the Department of Justice from its ability to go in and deal with banks that are causing the same problem that they caused 2008. And honestly and truly, I just can't imagine how these guys can get up there and with a straight face try to strip the Department of Justice from preventing what nearly was a depression back in 2008. Are you familiar with this action, Bob?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm. Are you surprised?
I mean, talk about selling your soul to the devil.
I mean, well, good God, Lloyd Blankfein of Goldman Sachs has officially declared Bernie. He's basically said he's afraid that Bernie Sanders is going to inspire somebody to hurt poor Lloyd. He has called Bernie Sanders dangerous.
Of course, Bernie Sanders and his ideas and the impact that Bernie Sanders is having among the younger people who are going to have to hew the wood and draw the water, basically, and others beyond their tender age, yeah, he is a danger to them. And they would love to see him go the way of all flesh.
This thing won't go away, Jim. Blankfein has referred to Bernie's very candidacy as a dangerous moment.
I know this, and it is certainly regrettable that a person who is simply trying to ameliorate some of the conditions that in which we find ourselves now, they want him to go away. And they don't care how he gets away. I really believe that. They are extremely capable of doing anything.
Well, okay, here's a little bit more to add on to it. You know, Tim Geithner was was at one point the Treasury Secretary, right?
That's right.
So in an article in Politico, Geithner says that Bill Clinton said to him, Bill Clinton said, you could take Lloyd Blankfein into a dark alley and slit his throat, and it would satisfy them for about 2 days, then the bloodlust would rise again. Because I guess Bill doesn't think that that Lloyd Blankfein and Goldman Sachs did anything damned wrong in, crashing the American economy and looting the entire world out of trillions of dollars.
Not really.
I mean, Bill Clinton said that.
Yeah, I know he did. I know. And that's what, that's one of the things that started to make me realize about Bill Clinton and the whole thing. And, of course, his daughter, and I think I heard on your program, is now comfortably employed on Wall Street. Making, what, $600,000 a year?
Is or was. I'm not sure the exact particulars of it, but, yeah. I think she works for the Clinton Foundation now.
Oh, well, she'll never have to worry about anything, that's for sure. She'll be taken care of. And what Bernie Sanders said about her being a progressive when she takes $15 million from Wall Street, and that's just a cover figure. God only knows how much hush money has done a lot of talking with her. I mean, it's just incredible. I guess I was terribly naive. I used to believe in Bill Clinton, and I voted for him back in 92, whatever.
For him twice, just like I voted for Obama twice.
Yeah, same.
And when they were engaging in the great cleanest hunt, you know, Bill left office with a 66% approval rating.
But, sure did.
But that was an approval rating, Jim, that arose out of the American people's general disgust with the sad, sorry, and tawdry crap that he had been subjected to. I mean, because most of America really did feel like what goes on between a husband and a wife, or a husband and a husband, or a wife and a wife. Well, back then it was just husbands and wives. That it was between the partners to the marriage. But most people didn't see what else was going on along the way.
Oh, no.
And what was going on along the way was a really, really vile, nasty campaign of essentially Republican leanings. You know, what they did to poor people with welfare reform, it wasn't just bad, Jim. It was vicious.
You're right. Not even a reach around. And they played that thing up with Bill and Monica to divert everybody's attention from the covert stuff that they were doing in the background. They wanted to get everybody's attention on that, knowing full well they probably would not impeach the president over that. But, you know, I can see Hastert and all of his House managers marching in when all the time they were doing all this kinds of stuff to allow Wall Street and K Street to further reach their inroads and then, you know, get away with absolute murder. I mean, it's like Bernie Sanders said, a kid gets popped for marijuana, simple possession. That's going to be with him for the rest of his life. And these Wall Street people, they can steal and steal and steal and steal and steal, and they might take a couple like Bernie Madoff and one or two others.
But Bernie Madoff got taken away because he ripped off the rich people. Okay, that's the only reason Bernie Madoff got popped, is he started screwing people who had walking around money.
Yeah, he did.
But okay, just and I speak of West Virginia because West Virginia is what I'm familiar with, Jim. But consider, in this state, you can go to prison for not less than one nor more than 10 years upon the discretion of the commissioner of the Department of Corrections for stealing $1,000 or more in money or value. Got that?
Uh-huh.
And there are plenty of people who are, you know, I mean, you know, let's say Billy Joe Bob Bubba's all liquored up and he's got his Freedom Protector on his hip or whatever, and he decides he wants him a four wheeler, and he steals him a four wheeler. Well, he can go to prison for 1 to 10 on that.
Yeah, Grand
but the penalty, also. but the penalty is the same Lloyd Blankfein doesn't go to jail, no matter what he does to the economy, and neither does anybody else at Goldman Sachs or any of those other predatory firms on Wall Street. But we've got, I mean, the law books, the West Virginia Code is chock-a-block with punishments for people who do stupid things. But the ones who, with cold calculations, and through using a system that is designed for them, managed to... No, not so much. Jesus Christ, look at that. Don Blankenship will not go to jail for as long as somebody who stole $1,000.
Oh, I certainly agree with you. He won't. I dare say he'll see it one day, $5.
And as far as the Clintons are concerned, there's an author named Michelle Alexander. She wrote a book called The New Jim Crow, Jim. And that book was what really shone the light on the mass incarceration problem in this country. And a week or so ago, she wrote the following. And I think it should be taken very seriously. If anyone doubts that the mainstream media fail to tell the truth about our political system and its true winners and losers, the spectacle of large majorities of black folks supporting Hillary Clinton in the primary races ought to be proof enough. I can't believe Hillary would be coasting into the primaries with her current margin of black support if most people knew how much damage the Clintons have done. The millions of families that were destroyed the last time they were in the White House thanks to their boastful embrace of the mass incarceration machine and their total capitulation to the right-wing narrative on race, crime, welfare, and taxes. There's so much more to say on this topic, and it's a shame that more people aren't saying it. I think it's time we have that conversation.
Well, I do, too. I mean, the prison industry, we have what we call the prison industrial complex.
Right.
And, you know, these people are making gazillions off of these privatized prisons in which people are just basically maintained at a minimal subsistence, whereas the people who own them, they're getting rich as hell. And, you know, you can imagine how, you know, prison's bad enough, but when you've got it being privatized at a profit, you can just imagine. I mean, this is redolent of, excuse my reference, the SS and what they were doing with people in their prisons. And the only thing that was valued to them was the gold in their teeth and the hair on their head and whatever else they could confiscate. Is that a fair analogy?
Largely, I think, yes.
I think it's more than marginally, to tell you the truth.
No, I said largely, not marginally.
Oh, okay, okay. But nonetheless, I mean, it's just incredible. But, I mean, when I watched Maxine Waters today trying to get across her point about Department of Justice being able to go into these banks and to be able to bring these bastards to justice, and yet these other Republicans were talking about, well, it's a choke point against rent-a-centers and the other people that I mentioned earlier in our phone con. I mean, I thought to myself, dear God, talk about trying to give people a license to rob, lie, cheat, and steal beyond what they have already.
I know. Yeah.
I mean, that poor woman was absolutely distraught. And he just kept taking minutes out of her time, and these other guys from one from South Carolina, one representative. He represents my hometown. I can't remember the asshole's name.
Gowdy? But
I'm not sure, Bob. I'll tell you the truth. I had to switch it off, and then I came back to see exactly how Representative Waters would retort. And it's just incredible. They want to allow these banks to just do all this stuff that costs people their homes, their fortunes, their lives, literally, to do so with impunity. And they're trying to blame it on a choke point against smaller businesses and, you know, the mom-and-pop operations. I mean, not even a child in the eighth grade listening to that dialogue this afternoon could not see exactly what was going on. Yet these people have the nerve on live television to see exactly what they're trying to do against what Ms. Waters is trying to do. I mean, if this bill is not voted down, and the president's going to veto it anyway, but, you know, it'll come back. I can guarantee you one thing. The next president, if I think, who I know will probably be in there, I'm sure they'll probably sign the hell out of it.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And the Donald, isn't he a piece of work?
I think there have been cracks exposed in his armor.
Oh, I certainly
hope so. The feet of baloney foretold in last night's prophecy have been laid bare.
True. I mean, this guy is.
But I mean, he's got a big lead in New Hampshire, and I see no reason why he shouldn't win New Hampshire. But let's think about some of the other people who've won New Hampshire. Didn't Pat Buchanan win New Hampshire in the Republican primary?
Yep, you're right. You did.
And let's, you know, before we all get crucified. Let's remember that Iowa has handed the Republican victory to Mike Huckabee, Rick Santorum. Not to, but I mean, because we are, after all, talking about Republicans. They're not, Republicans are Republicans wherever they are, but in places like New Hampshire and Iowa, I think they're especially precious and representative. Now, I'm not talking about Democrats in New Hampshire and Iowa. I'm talking about Republicans. And those people are just plain stupid with a capital stew.
You're saying that Mike Huckabee was the winner of the Iowa caucus?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I thought it was a contest between Cruz and Trump.
No. In the past, he's won, as has Santorum. You got 28% and you're the winner in Iowa? Hey, well, okay, congratulations.
I don't know. But I just thought I would comment on that bill before the House and what the Republicans are trying to do.
They're just the dog. They're the dog sitting by the Victrola listening to their master's voice. Okay, I mean, it's what Wall Street and the Koch brothers want, and by God, they're going to try to deliver to the best of their ability.
Well, how long ago did you and I have a conversation about Wall Street and K Street?
It probably near a decade.
I think it was probably the first month that you were on the air.
Very likely, because that was back during the heady days of bug spray delay, talking about a permanent Republican majority.
Yep, you got it. There it is. But I don't know. It's going to be a rather serious thing once Obama leaves office. I mean, Obama hasn't done exactly what I would have voted him to do and stuff like that. But it's like they used to say, enjoy the war because the peace is going to be worse.
Or as Robert Penn Warren used to describe it, it's going to be hell among the yearlings.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, you've got these people who actually have the nerve to try to cloak this good bill that would make the banks responsible and then allow them to do what they wish with total impunity, and anything they get into, regardless of whomever they hurt, they always come out on top. They only have to pay a fine. A minimal fine, and then the victims are left to fend on their own with no means of rescue or restitution. The idea of the law, in my opinion, or what used to be, when a person has been victimized, is to make that person whole. That's all gone out the window.
Yep.
And they've taken the word whole and they dropped the W. That's the only thing they get.
It's so true. Absolutely true. So are you gonna watch the head-to-head debate tonight at 9?
No, I don't know if I am or not. To tell you the truth, I've already got it set to record. They have this big thing about Bernie Madoff on the other channel. I don't know. You know, I'll watch it one way or the other. Tell you the truth. I've seen so much today when I watch C-SPAN about this debate about the operation choke point of the Republicans, what they call it. I don't know if I can take any more. But I guess that they'll have Bernie and Clinton will have a good talk. But I mean, you know, let's face it. I think 11% of this country are basically considered what is called liberal. Okay, is that a correct percentage?
It's hard to tell based on, you know, it's that's entirely dependent upon who's doing the asking.
Well, that's what I get on the, you know, CNN and MSNBC. And I know Bernie Sanders has those people pretty much locked up. And I certainly hope that they will support him and be able to see how far-reaching his doctrines are. But, you know, you've got Clinton, who all that money behind her and a machine, and then not to mention, on the opposite side of the aisle, Trump, and I guess it's going to be Cruz. He's in number two, or which is, I can't keep them straight, to tell you the truth, because each one is calling the other so many names.
Well, and you can always remember Rubio by just putting little in front of Marco.
Okay.
He's the little one. He's the hobbit.
Yeah, he is. And
not a good hobbit. He's more like one of your Sackville Bagginses.
True. Not from the land of the Shire, but from the land of Mordor. But I don't know.
If we're going to work the Lord of the Rings metaphor for a minute, I would say that I would say that Cruz is worm tongue. Well, doesn't it fit?
It does.
And Trump, I don't know. Trump is that big, really nasty Uruk Hai orc. And of course, the eye in Barad-dûr, it's not one eye, it's two, and it's a single eye from both David and Chuck Koch.
No, Trump. Let's not degrade him. Now he's the Balrog.
All right. I can live with Balrog. Yeah. That makes some sense. Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's just hope he meets his fate at Khazad Dûm.
And so that would make Jebya one of those little piss ant orcs that can't come out in the daytime.
Effectively. But there it is. Oh, by the way, I heard that Donald had problems with his plane. I'm sure somebody is going to really suffer about that.
Oh, dear God! What would it?
Well, he had this big seven.
Did the Knutton valve go out?
Oh, I saw a documentary about Trump and his plane. You should see it. And when they sent it in for refurbishing last year or whenever, somebody had made a mistake at the operations office and had sent different cowlings, had different serial numbers on the cowlings. And they had a conniption because that plane had to have the same cowling that came with it. So, I mean, you know, those things that right open up into the engine. And so Trump had to have his plane completely redone, everything in gold, and because there was a seam in the carpet of the companionway of the aircraft, they had to completely redo that because Trump can't stand anything that's just not so perfect. But, you know, hey, he's flying around in his floating palace.
Well, talking about airplanes reminds me of something, Jim. I would like to commend to you and to everyone else, and I'm not gonna spend any time on it on air, but over at the Daily Beast, thedailybeast.com, there is an absolutely fascinating and pretty in-depth article titled "Why Glenn Beck's Media Empire is Burning Down," and it's a really, really interesting examination of something that I never understood in the first place, i.e., how did that little weirdo get so damn rich? And it talks about how he's tried to build an empire, and And your mention of airplanes reminded me because, because he's got this monumental ego, he bought an antique DC-9. And I know you know what a DC-9 is.
Yes, sir.
And it's costing a blue bajillion dollars to maintain. And he had it painted with the logo of his like patriotic clothing line or something stupid like that.
Yeah.
Oh, there it is. Yeah. It's the DC-9 that belonged to, and I know you remember this name, Richard Mellon Scaife. He's the guy who funded the great cleanest hunt.
Oh, okay.
But a paragraph from the article, the vintage jetliner cost around $1 million due to its great age, but is ruinously expensive to maintain, operate, and fuel, and required the hiring of two pilots at tens of thousands of dollars per month, a corporate expense to be added to the estimated $1 million a year for Beck's personal security force.
Yeah, it's really odd because those planes have been declared not even safe.
I was thinking about that. There were problems, weren't there?
Yes, they had a hell of a, and the DC-10 as well. I mean, there's a whole channel on the Smithsonian Network that talks to nothing about nothing but airplane crashes and the problems that they had with that series of airplanes. Yeah.
Well, but it's over at the Daily Beast. Why Glenn Beck's media empire is burning down. It's a really interesting read for anybody who is who is curious about how right wing media work. I mean, I can't imagine. Well, I can imagine if the kind of money that was put into Glenn Beck got put into a progressive broadcaster, and I'm not talking about me necessarily.
I understand.
There would be far more of a there would be far more people in this country identifying themselves as progressives or liberals because they would have an outlet for information about what that means. We wouldn't, you know, Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton wouldn't be and her followers wouldn't be able to sleaze Bernie with it. Oh, God damn, he's a democratic socialist. I mean, that's practically Stalin. You know, when what it is practically FDR.
That's exactly what he is. He's not a, you know, they would have you think he's a democratic centralist like Lenin or something like that. That's what they're trying to put across, actually.
Yeah, we're all going to be singing the International and,
right,
you know, driving,
exactly.
and driving you know, shitty automobiles.
Exactly. And so, you know, it's just amazing. I mean, if, you know, just to see what people will get away with.
Oh, what was that god-awful toxic East German automobile?
Which one?
I mean, it was just, I think the body was made out of, like, compressed toxic waste or something.
Is this the one like in East Germany or
the Tru something? Begin with T R A.
They have one.
I mean, it's horrifying to me to think of Germans building bad automobiles, but they did in East Germany because they were under the Soviet sphere of influence, and and the Soviets were busy building that crappy, what was it, the Lada?
Lada, yeah. Yeah, exactly. I remember the Lada. Yeah, you sure as hell wouldn't want to ride in one either. It's like, you know, giving yourself a ride in a concrete mixer. That's for damn sure. But, I mean, you know, it's just incredible. Well, no, it's not incredible. I mean, nothing surprises me too much anymore.
The Trabant, Jim, the Trabant.
Is that it?
Yeah.
I remember they had one that came out of Yugoslavia called the Yugo. I'm not sure where that went.
Oh, that's
a different. That I guess that's a different part.
Yeah, Time magazine named the 1975 Trabant among the 50 worst automobiles of all time, and that's what we're all going to be driving.
Well, I'm sure the Stasi were driving Mercedes, right?
Oh, well, not necessarily. Not if they had to get them from the West.
They sure had a lot.
Time magazine refers to the 75 Trabant as the car that gave communism a bad name.
Oh, my Lord.
A two-stroke pollution generator engine that maxed out at an ear-splitting 18 horsepower.
Well, let me tell you something. The elite over in East Germany weren't driving those cars. They were driving either a top-made Russian car or a Western Mercedes. I saw that myself when I was there. That's for damn sure.
God, whoever wrote this really hates this car. Let's see. Trabants smoked like an Iraqi oil fire when they ran at all and often lacked even the most basic of amenities like brake lights or turn signals.
Oh, yeah, it was totally stripped down. It was just four wheels on the road. That's basically it. And hopefully, you know, your engine started when you put the key in, or, you know, you had a neighbor who could give you a hand, because they didn't have any types of depots or anything where you could take your car and stuff, you know. They didn't have, you know, filling stations and repair things like we know. During that time, same thing was like in the Soviet Union. You know, when they had their different types of cars, they had Zils, Povedos, and those were driven by the party hierarchy and stuff like that. And then you had the Lada, and it was the point that when they parked their cars like the Lada, they would take the windshields off the windscreen because people would steal them.
You can steal the windshield, Jesus.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And, of course, the party elite, they had Chaikas, Zils, and Brezhnev loved those. And they were like big Lincolns. And there was another one. I can't remember the name of that damn car. But, I mean, you could always see one coming. And, of course, the secret police had the KGB, they had one that was like a Nash Rambler. And they were all black. You saw one of those coming, you got your ass out of the way.
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, listen, I'm not trying to eat up all your time here, but I just thought I would just...
No, I'm sitting here looking at the Gazas and the Pobedas and the Volgas and, yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, Volga was supposed to be a pretty good car.
Well, they all look like American cars, so I imagine there was probably some espionage involved.
Oh, yeah, but, I mean, you know... Back in those days, I mean, you saw a car coming down the road that had curtains at the windows and stuff like that. Well, you better just get the other way.
Get your happy pro ass off the road.
That's it. Move, bypass and haul ass. Well, listen, enjoy the conversation. Enjoyed last night. I thought you and your fellow
evil jealousist.
What?
Evilgelist.
Mr. Bjorn were quite enjoyable. It was a good laugh because, I mean, in spite of all the stuff that's going on down around and everything falling down around everybody's ass, you know, well, not everybody's, but our asses, it was a good respite. That's for damn sure.
Well, we all need a giggle now and then, Jim.
Yes, sir. Well, you have a good evening, and I don't know what the weather's going to be like over at your place.
Down to about 23 tonight. We're a tolerable 60 degrees here in the studio right now.
Is it dark over there yet?
Yes.
I just wondered because I just don't know no more, Bob.
It's like that song lyric from You'll Never Leave Harlan Alive, where the sun comes up about 10 in the morning and goes down about 3 in the day.
There you go. All right, well, have a good program. Be good. Be good at it and all that. My best to your family and whatever you're trying to do.
All right, thank you kindly, Jim. You have a good evening.
Thank you, sir.
Bye now.
Bye.
Jim from over there where the sun goes down a little earlier, I reckon. I mean, he's south of me, not west of me, but east. What? Yeah. So it is about 6 minutes before the hour, and yes, we have $160 to raise this evening. Which and thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly, VJ, for the round number, and thank you, Roger, for getting us started. Note coming from Jennifer in Australia. Based on the mention of the Koch brothers, doesn't matter where they are. All teabagger legislatures are Koch whores in the brothers' 50-state strategy. Sorry to be crass, Bob. You're not being crass, but I'm O-M fucking G busting a gut. Read an alarming interview by Sam Cedar with journalist Jane Meyer about her book Dark Money. How the Kochs are fueling the radical right. I've not read it, but had heard tell of Meyer when the Usurper brothers seriously attempted to destroy her because her research is revealing their decades-long game plan to take over the United States by bottom-to-top assimilation. Note, I've been from day one requisitely hair on fire convinced that Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz is an insane theocratic demagogue and more dangerous by miles than T-Rump, but this was indigestibly scary. Myers implies that Trump is the safest bet if we end up getting electorally fucked because he is the only Republican candidate not taking orders directly from the Kochs and hence uniformly legitimizing the NRA, opposing fair wages, and denying climate change, which doesn't matter because climate change will have its way. Respond we will because response is inescapable. But Trump doesn't kiss the ring. He doesn't attend their mandatory secret meetups. No. And granted, he's erratic and no less stubborn, but nowhere near as ideologically steadfast. Sure, he's a weather vane in the thinnest of policy positions, but he is on record, at least currently, wanting to strengthen, not privatize, Social Security, which is also on top of the Koch's list of demands. So please tell me, Bob, that Trump doesn't turn out to be the sane choice? No. No! Con! Yeah, no. Obligatory Star Trek reference. There is... No. I mean, that's kind of like Jimmy Carter saying, well, if I had to pick one, I'd pick Trump. There was... And of course, that's the kiss of death among Republicans. Jimmy Carter likes him? Not Jimmy Carter, not that squishy Sunday school teacher who follows the real Jesus, not the homosexual Jesus. There is no sane right-wing choice, because it's right-wing. And while he's not engaged in Koch ring-kissing right now, he still considers the Kochs to be of his class. And you know... Jennifer, darling, class will out. On the other hand, this business of Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton complaining about Bernie saying he's a progressive... And thereby having to add Well, I'm a progressive, too. I'm a progressive who gets results. And I'll be a progressive president who gets results. Come on. This is not my first rodeo. I don't care if Jesus Christ comes back. Granted, he's all brown and Middle Eastern and everything. No way he would ever be elected president. He ain't even Christian. I mean, he was a Jew like Bernie. But he couldn't do anything with the House of Representatives as it is currently constituted. I mean, we've got to do that reality spoken here thing. And the Congress is a reality with which we have to contend. Just as Barack Obama has had to do, the vast majority of what he can do presidentially will have to be done via executive order, and via things that can be done in through the administrative state. And to the extent that the Congress controls the purse strings, even that's limited. You know, one of these days, and that's the great fear. Then this is, you know, one of those reasons I'm going to, you know, if I have to, vote for Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton, is that a Republican president would go along with the crazy shit that the House wants to do. Get rid of the Department of Education? Absolutely. Get rid of the EPA? Absolutely. We don't need that. I mean, that has nothing to do with America. I mean, what we need to do is let the free market sort out problems like Flint or Sebring, Ohio, or, you know, the sacrifice zone of Central Appalachia. Free market needs to sort that out. Because, you know, the free market will self-regulate. Jesus. In the town hall event on Chicken Noodle News, Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton said, I was somewhat amused today to hear, she was amused to hear Senator Sanders set himself up as the gatekeeper for the definition of what's progressive. I don't think it helps for the senator to be making those kinds of comparisons because clearly we all share a lot of the same hopes and aspirations for our country. Okay, well, you know what, Hillary? You're free to call yourself a democratic socialist, too. You jump right on the, get right on the bus. She was asked about why it is that young people just seem to can't stand her. Because among voters 17 to 29, 84% went for Sanders in Iowa. She said, that's amazing. I accept the fact that I have work to do to convey what I stand for, what I've accomplished, what I want to do for young people in our country. They don't have to be for me. I'm going to be for them. The hell does that even mean? Why is it so hard to acknowledge what I said here last night? Carol simply noting, no, she's not. The Clintons are not now and have never been progressive people. They are center-right. It is just what they are. And, you know, there's a whole lot of us progressives out here who are saying, you know, look, we'll vote for the center-right candidate as opposed to voting for somebody who makes Generalissimo Francisco Franco, who is still dead, look like a Molotov cocktail-throwing Trotskyite. You know, Cruz, Rubio, any Republican. I'll be honest. If it was going to be allowed to happen, but it won't be. Probably, from a political standpoint, the most frightening Republican out there is Kasich, because he acts like he actually understands a few things instead of just sticking his finger up his ass and yelling, Bruga, Bruga, Bruga. Be afraid, America. Be very afraid. Bernie countered, of course, saying, taking $15 million from Wall Street and voting for the Iraq War. Well, that's just not progressive. You can't be a moderate and a progressive. They are different. Which is a little bit of a nicer way than saying center right. But center right is where she is. Jennifer noting progressive who gets results has become her stock response to accusations that her money comes from Wall Street. as if where the money comes from is incidental, and the end justifies the means. So what if I took $15 million? I mean, I'd take $15 million from you if you had $15 million, but you don't, and Wall Street does, so that's where I got the $15 million. That's progressive. Not so much. Carol noting, I just got lectured by a Hillbot that I should abandon my foolish desire for a Sanders presidency and just follow Hillary because immature children are idealists. That Hillbot is no longer with us, Carol reports. All right, let's go back to the phones for a little bit. Hey, what's happening? Welcome to the program.
I wanted to answer a question that you asked last night.
Okay. I hope I'll remember asking it.
It was back during the last few years of my time during the political services in the 90s. But if you remember, you asked a question about why was it that Rush Limbaugh was making the comments about Hillary wanting to run for president so damn bad? But it turns out, and this was not, I mean, it was known, but it wasn't like bannered about, but one of the main reasons why her husband put her in charge of that health care, which ended up being a debacle, was that there was an actual attempt to set her up to run as a third after he ran out of his term to run after him.
See, I mean, they've said that, but I don't necessarily. I was paying attention. I never saw that.
No, it was actually. In fact, I went to one of the fundraisers for that as a exploratory pack. Now, it wasn't actually sponsored by quote unquote Hillary Clinton, but it was sponsored by one of those what we now call super PACs. But back then, they were political exploratory committees. What have you? I was tangled up with an organization called the American Freedom Coalition, which was back in those days a libertarian right wing Sung Young Moon operation. But they had their fingers in multiple pies, and the rumor mill was churning pretty hard.
But that's the thing. The only place that those rumors ever came from that I was aware of, John, was from the right wing.
Well.
Almost as if it was a fond desire, like they wanted to run against her.
Well, as one of the tricks that was done a lot when I was finishing up my time, and you've probably seen it yourself when you do things like the ANIAC and stuff like that, is that in some cases what they'll do is before you actually make your announcements and stick your toe in the water, is you make a call to some. You know, kind of like that house, like that show that's on now, like House of Cards. You know, you get some pet reporter or something like that to float the possibility of, and to see what the public reaction would be.
Run it up the flagpole.
Yeah, run the flagpole, see what's happened. But then when the healthcare thing blew up in her face, of course, that pretty much killed everything. But she has been, and I'm not, and see, I don't look at it as a Machiavellian thing. I mean, ambition is good. You know, you want to advance in your life, so all fine and dandy. But she has been looking for that presidency for a long, long damn time. And nobody, and people kind of, if you kind of go back and listen to her concession speech back in 08 or 07, 08, when she that whole that you know 40 million cracks in the glass ceiling, you know, her famous little concession speech. She was right then and there setting the initial condition that she was going to run after Barack Obama. And that's been, you know, like I said, and this is my opinion. You can take it for what it's worth or not worth, but. You're listening to a little bit of her exasperation because in some ways, and I'm not saying it's going to happen or not, but I bet you she's starting to feel the same thing she felt back in 08. You know, it was her turn and now some upstart nobody is coming out of the woodwork to potentially take it away from her. And you can hear it in her voice sometimes. She's like, dang, darn it, damn it, I police, and I worked, blah, da, 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 and then here comes some other guy, he's gonna snatch it from me. And, I don't know. You know, I'd personally like to see the man win myself, but, I've been in and around politics long enough to know that, he doesn't have to win. He has to win big to be able to get the DNC and stuff to sidle with him when it comes time to sponsor those delegates. And, he's going to have to basically mop the ground with her. Otherwise, the establishment is just going to give it to her. So, you know, that's my 5 cents worth of knowledge.
Well, maybe that is how it worked out. It just seemed to me that it seemed much more the perfervid yearnings of the right wing than anything that was actually ever really being put out there.
Yeah, I mean, you could be right. It just is my impression from my memories of that time frame that it was out there a little bit. It was just kind of fun to listen to because, you know, ever since they passed that amendment that curtailed the presidency to 2 terms, you know, that's always been, I mean, heck, back, remember back when they were actually floating the idea of Schwarzenegger trying to get his.
Oh, that I do remember. Off. And we were going to amend the Constitution so Arnold could be our president, but then he got caught stooping the maid.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, trial balloons go up all over the place. It's just most of them fall flat.
Oh, I remember. I remember when there were people who were interested in knowing whether Jay Rockefeller should run for president. I mean, yeah, you're right. There's lots of balloons.
Yeah, that's the thing about it. I mean, it just marvels at me. I mean, if you sit back and you listen to what Dr. Bill was talking about last week, and if you just stand back and just widen your viewpoint, it's like standing back on a giant cliff and just look at the big picture and you see all these pieces moving.
Well, as Carol points out, look, Hillary has essentially been running for president for 16 years, ever since Bubba left office, and she's still struggling to capture the hearts and minds of real progressives. Because people have been paying attention. And really, the business with, whether it's the prison industrial complex or the kneecapping of welfare recipients, there's not a lot of progressivism there. I mean, it's what Gertrude Stein said about Oakland. There's no there there.
You know, that's pretty much the case. I mean, you know, you can't, you know, her own words stammer to some extent with the progressives when she says, I was the senator of Wall Street. I mean, if you say it that blatant and that solid, now granted, she was arguing about something else. But
well, look,
words,
the never ever comment, that seemed to come from a place of frustration, because it's obvious that there are a lot of Americans who really, really do want universal single payer health care, John. And when she lectured us and said we will never ever have single payer health care. So much for progressive politics. And of course, the scare tactics that she tried to put in play, where she said, if Bernie tries to get universal single payer health care, nobody's going to have health care while we refight that fight. That's just crazy. That's not even remotely true.
No, it's not. It's not true at all.
I mean, you could. There are a million different ways to do it. And if I, little hillbilly elitist that I am, can come up with one of them, I'm sure the really sharp people, you know, folks like the smartest man on the radio, probably have, you know, 100 different ways. But if it was me, the first thing I would do is I'd stop this block grant bullshit and just fold the entirety of Medicaid into Medicare.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, why the hell not?
If you take the numbers, granted, tilted as they may be, if you take the numbers the United Nations puts out, There are roughly 37 countries in the world that are considered modern industrial states. Of the 37 countries, 36 of them have some sort of universal health care. Now, they approach it in different ways. You've got the British system, which is an entirely government-run operation. And you have, I think it's Switzerland or Sweden.
Oh, there's
like
all kinds of hybrids. There's the French system, the German system. And then there's, you know, the Canadian system, which seems to work really well.
But the key element is this. The United States is the only country in the world that virtually guarantees that if you get a major catastrophic illness, injury, or whatever, you are guaranteed to go bankrupt before public assistance will come in and help you. You have to actually demonstrate your poverty before, you know, unless you're like happen to be in the 60s or something like that.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, you have to give up. I mean, it's like any, see.
Well, no. Wait. That was the purpose of the Medicaid expansion, okay? Let's be clear about that. All that means testing crap went out the door if you accepted the Medicaid expansion. 134% of the poverty line gets you the Medicaid expansion.
Right.
And that number changes depending on how many people are in your household. I mean, now in places like Alabama, if you have a cardboard box to sleep in, you're too rich for Medicaid. If you have a minimum wage job, you are too rich for Medicaid.
Mm-hmm. And it's like I've listened to you say a few times. You know, what galls me is that, and people forget this, and you brought it up yourself. You know, Bernie has never been a Democrat. He has been an independent caucusing with the Democrats. And the thing that bothers me, and like I said before, for him to get the backing of the Democratic Party, he not only has to win, but he has to win big. He has to win enough delegates to essentially tip the table. If he doesn't win big, if he doesn't just flat out kick her rear end, then the establishment is going to back her.
Quite possibly.
That's just how the numbers work. And when she is so dismissive of the young people, saying, "Well, you know, I need to work harder." No, if you actually cared for their positions, you wouldn't have had to work harder. They would already hear it in your policies, in your ways, in your speeches. You would have already had them. If you haven't got them by now, you're never going to have them. And that's the thing. She is the, and I hate to say the word old, but she is, the remnant of the old.
Well, by now, with the passage of time, that centrist DLC stuff is an old Democratic Party. There is an emerging different Democratic Party that has a much more fiery, progressive insistence to it. Absolutely.
Right.
Hey, John, I got to roll out of here, but awful good talking to you, and hopefully we'll get at it soon.
Good enough.
All right. Bye-bye. Later. Bye. From out on the road somewhere late at night, and the rest of the song that goes with it, that's our buddy John. Quick break, and then we'll be back. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. 24 past the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. You know, Jim and I were talking a little bit ago about the apparently systemic problem of inequality. You know, when Bernie talks about inequality, he's not just talking about the economic stuff. I mean, there's the judicial, the legalistic inequality. And along the way, I mentioned people like, well, Don Blankenship, who got 29 men incinerated, and then there's Bob Murray, whose relentless, remorseless lust for coal-driven wealth got people killed in Crandall Canyon. But this is as good an example as any I've lately run across. Now you know about the clowns over at the what they call themselves, the Center for Medical Progress. Those are the sleaze bags that created the completely ginned up, faked up, frauded up, dummied up, rubed up so-called Planned Parenthood videos. Here, you want hey, that's pretty tasty. What is that, baby? Baby what? Baby? You know, those. Well, they got indicted. And it was deliciously ironic because the Harris County Grand Jury down in Houston was tasked with investigating the Planned Parenthood videos. And they investigated all of it. And they found Planned Parenthood had done absolutely nothing wrong. Because they hadn't. But along the way, they did find out that David Daladin and... what's the woman's name? Come on. Her name's Sandra Merritt. Well, they got their asses indicted for engaging in some pretty sketchy tactics in creating the frauds that were the Planned Parenthood videos. Well, David Daladin showed up in court. He was indicted this past January, just last month, on felonies, tampering with a government record, and that carries up to 20 years in prison. Mm-hmm. So he shows up facing a 20-year felony, and the prosecutor says, here, we'll be happy to put you on probation. All you have to do is keep your nose clean, and we'll just drop the charges, and you won't even have a criminal record. Now, the way the Harris County Prosecutor's Office described it was to say,
that's typically offered to nonviolent offenders.
Really? I wonder how typical it would be, say, for a nonviolent, weed offender. Shall we look into the demographics of Harris County, Texas, and find out just how typical that is? Or is it quite typical? But you can go out there and you can engage in crime in order to attack a woman's absolute constitutional rights. And you can get offered probation. Now, given the fact that people like David Daladin influence other people to do things like bomb and shoot women's reproductive health care providers, one cannot help but wonder at the process whereby Daladin's work is deemed to be nonviolent. My ass. I hope these ignorant sons of bitches had the common stupidity to reject the deal and insist on going to trial. Now it's Harris County, maybe they'll lose. But it's kind of hard to lose a case when you admit you're guilty, because they admit that they used forged identification documents in order to create their stupid little fictitious video. They presented fake IDs in April 2015, and they posed as executives from a fake company in which they sought to buy baby. Yeah, I need about 152 pounds of baby. What kind of baby? Baby. Well, I mean, would you like to go to the tasting room? Fuckers. 30 minutes remaining in the program, $160 to go in fundraising for this evening to stay up to the good. Oh, damn. VJ's got me. I was worried about the change, but yeah, 196, but yeah, it's 170 left to go. 170. Sorry, VJ. Look, we know I'm not a math guy. By the way, going back to the conversation earlier, Jennifer says, Carol's spot on. Clinton is a machine. And John just gave me a notion. We've seen multiple presidential elections outright stolen by the rapigs from the Democrats. But could it be possible for a Dem-on-Dem theft? Well, I mean, look at there were shenanigans. There were shenanigans in Iowa. No doubt about it. Jennifer continues on the present topic. Damn, I was going to say I love the smell of indictments in the morning, and then you let me down, Bob, with stuff typically offered to white rapig-licking men. There we go. Mm-hmm. By the way, going back to the coal discussion in West Virginia from the filibobster, Ron and Raleigh says, Bob, it's not, that was not a Bob. That's just a butt Bob. It's not the fault of those coal execs. It's the fault of that Kenyan Muslim yada yada in our White House. Why you got to leave out the you slurper part, Ron? Mm-hmm. But it's good to know some state governments are getting some work done. Scott Walker, I guess, signed a law in today. For Hunter Pink, or what's being called Hunt Pink. It's a really hot pink that I guess is high visibility in the woods of Wisconsin. And, of course, you've got a photograph. Jenny up in Wisconsin has provided a photograph of some God-fearing, upstanding, amosexual, manly men standing around wearing bright pink T-shirts that say, Hunt Pink. And I agree with you, Jenny. Sounds creepy. A little bit scary, even. Mm-hmm. All right, let's run over to the stress line and see if we can carry on a conversation. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, is this the stress line? I never was sure exactly which one it was.
Yeah, you're on the stress line.
Oh, well, this is Carl from Columbus, Lillicrae.
Oh, hey, Carl. How you doing?
Yeah, well, I never bothered to call before, as you know, but something came up, and I didn't know if you had seen it or not. And I'm talking about the congressional Flint investigation.
I've read about the notorious absence of one Rick Snyder.
Oh, baby, you got to check this out. This is, okay. This becomes really easy to understand if you understand how previous jihadist investigations had been basically turned into circular firing squads against this or that constitutionally mandated government agency.
In this case, the EPA.
Exactly. You're already thinking three steps ahead. Right. So this came up. So naturally, Jason Chaffetz turns it into exactly what you said. Now, of course, really good things were said by some of the people with the toxic letter D attached to their names, such as Elijah Cumming, and they're also worth seeking out when you watch that clip.
But, I mean, just the most singularly outrageous thing where, you know, I mean, you knew that they were going to try to take the onus away from Snyder and just try to place it on the EPA because you should have notified, you should have done this. Well, you know, of course they did, but if nobody pays attention, you know. But anyway, I mean, this is really worth seeking out, this clip. It's just really just wondrous and heartwarming.
And isn't Jason Chaffetz the immediate successor to one Daryl Issa?
Well, this is the funny thing. I haven't heard the name Daryl Issa being bandied about in a good year.
Well, I mean, that's because Chaffetz. Well, okay. I saw his name bandied. I saw some bandying, Carl.
Did you?
Yeah, because he's declared that the FBI has no choice but to indict Hillary Clinton. Now, you tell me when you get the memo where the FBI goes about the business of indicting anybody.
Right. I remember you saying that now. Yes. Yes, I didn't realize that was ISA, but yeah, I remember you saying that.
So that... And of course, it's over the emails. She had classified emails on her servers that should have been classified top secret before anybody let her see them. Never mind the fact that they were classified after.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Yes, of course. I mean, they were post-classified. That's number one. It's nothing any different than, and I'm not saying that there may not be some malfeasance involved, but there's nothing there that's any different from what Darth Cheney had done when he had things reclassified too.
Well, that did happen, didn't it?
It sure did. Now, just because she has the classified emails doesn't mean that there's anything there that, I mean, for all we know, these classified emails could very well be absolutely exculpatory. We don't know. We'll never know. So you can draw any conclusion you want, but the fact is that just because she has these classified emails, that in itself is unfortunately not, you know...
Dispositive?
Pretty impeachable.
It's not dispositive, but then again, we are dealing with a Republican House that has proven itself capable of impeaching over nothing in the past.
Well, yeah, it's funny how that works. It's like, we have all of a sudden, all across the country, we have prosecutors who cannot get an indictment against the ham sandwich, but on the other hand...
It's like that, you know, how many psychologists does it take to change a light bulb? Only one, but the light bulb has to really want to change. You know, how many prosecutors does it take to indict a ham sandwich? Only one, but you really have to want to indict the ham sandwich.
You have to really want, yeah, well, yeah.
So I think it's only going to get more interesting.
Oh, well, of course. You know, of course, you know, the straws that they're going to grab at are going to be, or just, I mean, of a variety in nature that no one in American history has seen before. You know, unfortunately backed by billions and billions of dollars. That's the best way, of course.
I would agree, yes.
But, so that's my recommendation. Pull that sound because it's a doozy.
I'm looking for it right now, and I'm trying to.
C-SPAN anyway.
Okay, that might involve some digging and some clipping and some editing, but it probably.
Well, if I find it before you, I'll post it in all the usual places.
Okay, or just shoot it to me in email. That makes it easier than anything else. A linky or whatever. Man, it's good to hear from you. We converse back and forth and cross post things, and I've run across you on Facebook and whatnot, but to finally get a phone call is really, really cool.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm just not really such a fan of having phones attached to my ear, but this is one occasion I wanted to make an exception.
It seems worthwhile. Thanks, Carl. I appreciate it a bunch.
You bet. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Take care now. How cool is that? If you follow me on Facebook, you will see Carl's posts quite prolifically on my page, because Carl finds things that I don't necessarily find. That was a wonderful call. It is 20 minutes before the hour, and it is 170, not 160. I was being a little over optimistic. Thanks for correcting my math, BJ. 17 at 10, 10 at 17, blah, 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 the usual, as we try to finish the evening okay for this first full week of February. So a bit of a program note for tomorrow. I have a doctor's appointment that is in the early morning hours. I hate those. I don't see any reason why that should interfere with Friday on the front porch. But I suppose the possibility is always there. So just a heads up, if I put out a program note, and I usually do that on Twitter, and then it gets picked up onto Facebook, that I won't be here tomorrow evening. That's why. But like I said, it shouldn't be anything like a big deal. I hope. So just a little heads up in case I turn out not to be here. I have not suddenly decided to run off and take an equatorial vacation. Although I'd like one. Gerald asking, that was the Carl on the line? That was the Carl. Yeah. Jennifer asks, will Carl's point work in Bernie's favor? Some say that Bernie is a risk because his policies are unattainable. So could others say Clinton is too risky because of her impeachability? I don't know that I would be willing to go there, because by virtue of being anything but a teabagger, any Democrat-elected president is always going to be impeachable. How many years now have we heard especially the Freedom Caucus hollering about how desperate the need is to impeach that Kenyan Muslim usurper in our White House? A lot. Okay, so yeah, some Bundy updating. This apparently not particularly good lawyer for ammonium nitrate Bundy says that his client was illegally denied the right to attend the hearing in Portland where the indictment against him was issued. That's Lisa Casey saying, it's a big problem that a current accused protester is not allowed to attend his own hearing. Political protesters need access to the court. I guess more people than, say, Billable Rick and me have been pointing out the really, really insane and arguably legal malpractice position of letting your client continue to run his mouth. Because she said, we've advised Ammonium of his right to remain silent, but he continues to want to speak out. So then she played another recording that he made there, a letter from Multnomah County Jail. Trying to explain away the fact that he's in the sneezer. And he said, this is what you get when government officials ignore the people. We have exhausted all prudent measures to get government officials to investigate the abuses to the Hammond family. Taking over the refuge was not only right, it was the duty of the people to do. I can't wait till you argue that to a judge, dumbass. Abuses of the Hammond family. Yet, still no mention of the abuses the Hammond family committed in being poachers on federal land and setting fire to federal land and nearly getting a firefighter killed. Oh, okay. Billable Rick has the video, Sparky says. All right. That's a good word. That's a good word. Devin says, he's got a bun date. Mandate, bun date. Oh, yeah. Then, meanwhile, another of the Patriots, namely John Krakenheimer, or Ritzheimer, I'm sorry, who, before he ever became a bird sanctuary Patriot, was trying to start firefights at mosques. Yeah. The Arizona Republic says that District Judge Eileen Willett held a hearing for Ritzheimer and refused to even admit him to bail. She found that there was a preponderance of evidence that he was a flight risk. She also said that he poses a danger to the community. Well, you know, the mosque business does kind of point in that direction, doesn't it? But by the way, the indictment was unsealed today, and, well, I guess nobody's going to be accused of overcharging the Hee-Haw Caliphate. Just that one miserable charge about trying to intimidate a federal official. No sedition. No trespass. Nothing. Yes, Devin. Yes, we. You're in your happy place this evening. Speaking of Bundy, he said duty. Duty. Yeah, right. Meanwhile, Krakenheimer, who was so angered by receiving dildos. Remember how he, in such a display of manliness, swept all the dildos off the table. He's out there trying to hustle up money for his legal defense. He's in jail, but he's also on Facebook with a video asking for donations for his legal defense in a court system that he doesn't even acknowledge. Yeah. Cognitive dissonance. Well, you've got to have cognitive ability before you can have cognitive dissonance. Thank you all in advance. I just want the country to live by the Constitution. I just want the government to abide by it. Well, we're doing our best, John, but invading a goddamn bird sanctuary isn't exactly living by the Constitution, you dumbass. God, the stupid is strong with these ones. And meanwhile, the four weirdos who remain out at the bird sanctuary, they have also been indicted as well. And once again, they've been charged with the same tepid crime. Impeding by force, intimidation, and threats, officers and employees of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I guess stream littering was too brutal. But yeah, the indictment says that they've solicited others and recruited others over social media starting back in November. Back in October, they warned the sheriff of Harney County that extreme civil unrest would come if their demands were not met. Two of the 12 that were initially arrested are out on electronic tracking devices, one of whom was the woman who said she wanted to, 17 years old, said she wanted to die for what Lavoie Finkham believed in. Mm-hmm. Uh, Jason Patrick, one of the already arrested and now indicted patriots, is calling the four at the bird sanctuary four idiots. Oopsie. Stupid. Goodness me, let's run out to Oregon itself and go to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Paul from Parts Unknown.
Oh, my goodness. Paul from Parts Unknown. How in the world are you?
Doing good. I got a little bit of a breather here. I work until the show goes off the air typically, so it's hard to call in.
No, I understand.
So, just when you think it's over here in Oregon, it just keeps going on.
Maybe the folks up in Portland might want to rethink that Keep Portland Weird slogan, because it's just getting weirder, and not in a good way.
No, it's getting a little scary, and people are talking about it out here, not specifically what happened today, but just, it's been going on long enough that it's in the conversation only for people that aren't politically plugged in all the time. Mostly... You might have beaten the subject to death, but mostly what I wanted to call in about real quick is a couple of nights ago to respond to that the Courtney blog post. About
the screaming blog.
Yeah. Simply because I've had this conversation with a few other people who are supporters of Hillary, and it's not antagonistic. What gets me mad is just that they feel like Hillary is entitled to it, and she is qualified, and she'd probably make a great president and a great candidate, but Bernie speaks to my policies more. I'm a little younger. I am on the cusp of Generation X and Y, and I lean closer to the Y generation. A lot of my friends are younger, and a lot of us younger folks who have been politically plugged in have been listening to Bernie speak from Brunch with Bernie's on the Tom Hartman show since the early 2000s, all through the Bush administration. And we know him. And when we were in our 20s, going off to Iraq and, coming back with PTSD, radiation poisoning, dying, and looking for weapons of mass destruction that weren't there, Bernie was saying no. And there were other liberal candidates who are gone but not forgotten, like Russ Feingold from Wisconsin.
Who may be coming back.
Yeah, and Dennis Kucinich from Ohio, who had the courage to stand up to the Bush administration and say, no, you're a war criminal, you need to be impeached. And Hillary was not on board with that, or Dr. Senator Clinton was not on board with that. And these are the same people that said, gay marriage is a constitutional right and we should treat everybody equally, and we're proponents for that. When in our 20s, these issues were no-brainers. And I understand that because we're young and we're more evolved on these issues because we're dealing with them on our lives on a day-to-day basis, which is now a little older and there's more of a voting base beneath us. I believe in the same thing. These issues can be pressed over. But, I want to stand by the candidate that has stood by me for the past decade. I don't want to stand as the candidate that greenlit my friends to be, to get shot at in a foreign country and told Wall Street to knock it off rather than reining them in. And, given those two choices, I'm going to lean towards Bernie. So please don't treat me like, and not that the whore community is doing this, but please don't treat me, Hillary supporters, as someone who's bright and starry-eyed, who's got no idea what's going on. The establishment has been treating the youth, both sides of the party, fairly bad for over a decade.
True.
Congressional approval ratings are at an all-time low consistently for year after year. And now the establishment and the people that back the establishment are surprised that a lot of people aren't backing them, especially the younger voters. And I talked to people who are my age, a little older, 5 years older seems to be the line, who are like completely in the bag for Hillary Clinton because they remember how great the Knights were because they were in their 20s. And I'm sure that I'd back Hillary too if I were lived my 20s and 90s where things are great and the economy is great. But I lived through friends getting shot up and the Iraq war and then the economy crashing. Those are my 20s, the Bush years. Yay. Yeah. I see the votes and the choices she made in a different light. And if Russ Feingold, Dennis Kucinich have to pay political prices for standing up for what they believe them, even though it costs them their jobs, then going along to getting along might just cost Hillary Clinton the nomination. The price of politics. And that seems to get them very angry at me when I make that statement. But
well, I mean, and the real key, first of all, let me say that I identify, I mean, I was in what was supposed to be the salad days of my earning years during the Clinton years, but because I was in West Virginia, not so much, because we never have salad days here. So, I know what you say has a lot of resonance with me, Paul. On the extending the idea, I'm tickled pink that the millennial Gen X Gen Y demographic is, or politographic if you want to, is wising up to the fact that your world is not being helped by same old middle of the road get along go along Democratic policy, that we've got to have progressive reform in this country. Now the next trick, says the grizzled old guy, the next trick is getting y'all to the polls. And because you are working, because you are struggling, because you are trying to build your lives, that's a hell of a lot harder trick than it is for the septuagenarians who, and the octogenarians and the nonagenarians who live for Election Day. And I'm not trying to be rude to the older voters, but it's a fact. They can go vote.
Don't underestimate the youth vote. They're the huge turnout in Iowa that Carol's talking about on the Democratic side. They're turning out through the help of social media. You know, they're fighting carpools, fighting times, posting problems like the voter caging. Like, ignore this letter. It's BS. This is not your polling place if you live in this district. So the communication of the younger Y generation through social media is combating the same old establishment dirty tricks. And I wouldn't be surprised if this election you saw a massive youth turnout, especially for Bernie, that was not just about talking about it, but about showing up.
And I hope so, Paul. And if they're really, really listening to Bernie, I hope they also have a little bit of time or energy to devote to trying, if they're somewhere that they can do it, to trying to throw some of these damn teabaggers out of the House. Because that's the biggest impediment, whether it's a Hillary presidency or a Bernie presidency, and we both know which I want. Anything in the way of change is going to have to be accomplished by getting rid of some of the more toxic members of the Republican Party. And that's especially difficult because that's your Steve Cantaloupe's Kings and your Louis Asparagus Gomerts and your Mo Brookses in Alabama. And that's a challenge. But anywhere there's an opportunity to work, and this really is, this is working with Bernie. Anywhere there's an opportunity to get rid of any Republican in the House, that has to also be a priority.
All right, well, I apologize, Bob, but I've got to go and handle some family stuff.
Well, I understand that, and I appreciate you calling in. It's a wonderful opportunity to talk, and I hope we can extend the conversation soon.
Yep.
And by golly, the almonds were wonderful.
Thank you.
Take care, Paul. Bye. Bye now. Paul from Parts Unknown, the creator of, among other things, the Holiday Paulmans, with a I am in total agreement with him, and because I'm one of those people who believes that this world belongs to them, not it belongs far more to them than to us. Own it, take it, seize it, because it doesn't belong to Bernie or to Hillary or to me or anybody over 50, really. It's y'all's. It's up to you. And so it is time to roll on out of here. Thanks going out very kindly to Andrew. Andrew has taken us from 170 down to Let me see if I got this right. $125.56. $125.56 to go to finish out the evening okay. Thank you very kindly, Andrew. Thank you, VJ, and thank you to Roger for getting us started. Thank you to our subscribers overnight. Thank you, one and all, for the time you spend listening to the program. Thank you very kindly to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox, to Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And, yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.